Hi, this is Mark Carrier welcoming you to the third episode of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies. Today's episode, Otto Wacker and a dead artist who just continues to paint and paint and paint. It's April 6, 1932, and Otto Wacker sits accused of art fraud in a Berlin courtroom. It's been a circuitous route for the Dusseldorf-born Wacker, from second-rate cabaret dancer to art dealer. He's had an unremarkable career under the unlikely stage name of Olindo Loyal, performing what he described as old Spanish dances, whatever that is. Not the usual springboard for a career in fine arts, to say the least. Worse still, his first steps, no pun intended, in selling paintings haven't been very promising. Not so many years before this court appearance, he was quickly exposed trying to sell an obvious fake Franz Stuck, a German symbolist expressionist. In any event, the hapless Otto would probably be far happier high-stepping some Spanish dance numbers than facing sinister-looking black-gowned lawyers and a dour-faced judge. He's in big trouble, accused of foisting no fewer than 33 fake Van Goghs on prominent Berlin gallery owner Paul Kasserer. The public filing into the visitor's section of the court can see the paintings in question, lined up on the wall just behind and above Wacker. Are they all fake? Are they all genuine? No one knows at this point, but there's plenty of hullabaloo surrounding the high-profile case, and the papers haven't missed a beat covering this story, often with bold front-page headlines. It's even subject of satire, as a newspaper humorist speaking of Van Gogh comments, "The dead artist just seems to paint and paint and paint." No one can foretell the outcome of the trial at this point. The court will hear the testimony of the accuser and the accused, as well as expert witnesses like de la Faye, author of the contentious catalogue raisonné of Van Gogh's work, and Vincent Willem Van Gogh, nephew of the artist. And certainly, no one can tell that one of the paintings exhibited behind the defendant, the representation of a large, flame-like cypress tree, referred to as work F614, de la Faye's catalogue number, will have an impact on a family in Western Canada nearly 70 years later. The popular imagination, incidentally, sees Van Gogh as the archetype of the tortured, unrecognized artist living in a hellish netherworld of insanity and crippling poverty. Van Gogh was manifestly mentally ill, but the rest of this folklore deserves a closer look. First, Theo Van Gogh generously supported his brother Vincent. The money the artist received from him would not have supported a lavish lifestyle, but it kept Vincent well above the poverty line. To put that money in perspective, the sums received from Theo were considerably larger than the salary of a minor 19th-century French civil servant. There's a wonderful painting by Van Gogh entitled The Postman Joseph Roulin, hanging at the Kunstmuseum in Winterthur, Switzerland. The subject, Roulin the Postman, took home a salary that was considerably less than Theo's stipend to Vincent, and yet he managed to run a comfortable Arles household and raise three children. So much for poverty. Another persistent feature of the myth surrounding Van Gogh is that he suffered from the gnawing frustration of being unrecognized. True, the works stacking up in brother Theo's crowded Montmartre apartment were not exactly selling like hotcakes. In fact, they weren't selling at all. And despite the optimistic words in his letters to Vincent, perhaps Theo was beginning to lose hope of ever realizing a return on the investment he was making in his talented brother. He never did, as it happens. That was left to his young widow, but Vincent Van Gogh, although not a household name until almost a century after his death, was what you might call a painter's painter. In his pre-Arles years in Paris, Van Gogh showed his work alongside Paul Signac, Gauguin, and Toulouse-Lautrec, all of them unknown at the time. Although the moneyed bourgeoisie was not yet disposed to purchase their art, all these magnificent artists attracted the attention of the cognoscenti. Long before the end of his short life, Van Gogh inspired artistic rebels in Brussels, Amsterdam, and as far away as Copenhagen. And Van Gogh's contemporaries were certainly not doing any better than he, as witness a letter from his brother Theo. Quote, "When we see that the Pizarros, the Gauguins, the Renoirs, the Guillaumins do not sell, one ought to be almost glad of not having the public's favor." I'll leave you with that for today, and in the next episode, we'll see how Otto Wacker fares in the courtroom. Are his paintings fakes, or all is Van Gogh's real and authentic? We'll see. Well, that's it for this episode of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies. Please subscribe, and if you're a victim of art fraud, please write to me. My email is fakesandfrauds, all in one word, at writeme.com. In closing, please note that a illustrated print version of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies is available at Amazon worldwide in Kindle or paperback format. So this is your host, Mark Luke Carrier, saying bye-bye for now.